Of you who are with us, I have to tell Zoom that it's okay to record. There we go. I have to honor the process and welcome. Many of you know Kirsten already. Kirsten did a presentation and ran a workshop on this at our conference back in Louisville back in April, if I'm remembering my months correctly. And it was wonderful and so many of us came out of there thinking, wow, we could go deeper with this. We could hear more about it. We could learn more about it. And so, as a member of the community engagement and learning team, I circled back with Kirsten a couple of months ago and said, would you be up to a second go at this just to expand and maybe deepen the conversation? And Kirsten, a member of the board of ODF and a experienced consultant in her own right, their own firm, as well as working for another one, very graciously agreed to do this in the middle of all she has going on. So, Kirsten, thank you for that. I am looking forward to the continuing conversation. You're going to refamiliarize us with this. So, just because we're jumping into it again, doesn't mean we're not going to take some time to reground everybody. And with that, I think I'll just turn it over to you, Kirsten, and let you make the best use of this time.
Sure. Yeah. So thanks so much for having me, and for all of you who showed up. Thank you for being here. I'm excited to have this conversation. So like Carlos said, back in Louisville, we did more of a workshop around this. We kind of had a case study, if you will, where table groups use the purpose archetypes model to make some design choices around a kind of a simulated option. So what we're going to do today, though, to kind of be more in line with the community conversation is truly have more of a dialogue around the purpose archetypes and their relationship to org design. And really what I would like to hear from you all after I set the stage a little bit is just kind of understand from you how this resonates with org design, how it changes your thinking about org design, how does it add to it, or what is this missing that the other models that we know and love have. So I'm really curious to hear your perspective after I set the stage a little bit and have a good conversation about this. So I'm going to start with a few things that we know. So what we know is that consumers are demanding more purpose-driven organizations. They're looking for organizations who provide some shared value, right? And then we also know that organizations who are purpose-driven, that are purpose-driven, are outperforming their peers. And part of a big reason that they're outperforming their peers is because purpose-driven organizations tend to have a better capability to take a long-term view. So they're really focusing on long-term shared value. And that competitive advantage is in their favor because they're not operating quarter to quarter, and they're not looking to increase profits quarter to quarter. The leaders are truly looking beyond that, and they're looking at the long-term viability of the organization and the long-term viability of all of the stakeholders the organization relies on to be profit generating. So those are some of the advantages and some of the things that we know about purpose-driven organizations. We also know a lot about purpose-driven leadership. There's been a lot of research and writing about that. You'll find a lot of thought leaders and consultants who are doing things around purpose-driven leadership, which is great. But as I started kind of diving into this world and looking for something that had more to do with the purpose-driven organization itself, the organization as a system, as opposed to the leaders or individuals within the system, I wasn't finding a lot. There's some out there, but I wasn't finding anything that really provided a toolkit for how to operate this way. And because we also know that purpose-driven organizations really are only successful if they are well aligned to their purpose, it can't just be a marketing tool. It can't just be a tagline. It really has to be embedded in the way the business operates. So that's what we set out to do with this work. And that's how I came to start New Commodity. So here we are. So with a background in organization design and development, and then a passion for this purpose-driven work, that's how I set out to create this and to create New Commodity and these tools. So let's get into it a little bit. First, I'm wondering, just kind of from the folks on the call so far, to what extent are you hearing leaders talk about these topics, things like ESG, CSR? So Tanya just popped up a poll. So, and feel free to chime in too. I'm just curious also about, you know, what we're seeing as a group, so.
Well, the good thing is I don't have any votes in the not at all. Oh, I did get one vote in the not at all category. Give it another few seconds. All right, I'm gonna wrap up the poll and share.
Okay, so it looks like we have about half of you who are starting to hear it to some extent and a little less than half of you who are hearing it to a great extent. Does anybody want to chime in and just talk about what it is that you're hearing from leaders as they mention these things? Like we may have gotten a couple comments. Yeah, so Jane, a lot of words about purpose, but yeah, very little work to do organizational alignment. Janet, lots of talk, not sure about action or implementation. So
actually why, this is Wesley, that's actually why I put none at all, because I hear them kind of talk about purpose as sort of this abstract concept, but I don't hear them talk about any kind of connection between purpose and the employee experience.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah. So there's a bunch of different ways to look at purpose. And one of them certainly is around, specifically around the employee experience. So how connected to the organization does the employee feel? And also, I think there's been some work around helping employees discover their own personal purpose and helping align that to the organization so that they feel more fulfilled in their day-to-day work and they can really draw that connection. We tend to look at purpose a little more broadly. So, and you'll see it in the model. So one of the things that we talk about is, you know, who all of the stakeholders that the organization serves, as opposed to just the employee or just the customer. But how do you really kind of calibrate the organization to have a more balanced stakeholder perspective? So it looks like we got a few more comments. Some training plans. Chris, given the times we are in, it seems leaders are now talking about social impact of the company and the overall reason for the company. Yeah, so I think that's kind of what leaders are starting to pick up on, is they're starting to hear the trend, they're starting to understand that it's important, but they don't really know what it means in terms of how they're going to run their business. So that's hopefully some of the stuff we're going to get to today, and hopefully what this model will ultimately help leaders do. So let's take a look. Here are a few of the other things that we know. I won't necessarily go over them again. I kind of touched on some of these. There's higher demand for it. We know that purpose-driven companies evolve and innovate faster. They tend to have more loyal customers and more engaged employees, and they have much stronger long-term trajectory. One of the things that I like most is that they're 63% more likely to survive a financial crisis. And I think a big part of that is the support that purpose-driven organizations have from their stakeholders. Their stakeholders understand that there's a reason this organization exists, and it's not just to build its own profit. It's to support a community. It's to make people's lives better. It's to improve the environment, improve the way we operate. So because of that more emotional connection, stakeholders are more willing to step up and in their own ways, help that organization get through a financial crisis, whether that's an economic downturn or something going on internally with the organization. So we definitely see those trends. So again, another thing I'm curious about, and we have a poll, but again, would love to, you know, hear people just chime in. So of these trends, which seem most important to your clients or company? Which are the ones that you're hearing leaders talk about or be concerned about in more recent months? And you can, I think we set it up so you can choose more than one. So.
We did a rare multiple choice option.
Not forcing you into one spot.
Give it another few seconds.
Okay, so evolve and innovate faster is kind of the clear front runner with more loyal customers and more engaged employees, kind of backing that front runner up. So this is one of those topics where for evolving and innovating faster, purpose-driven organizations have an advantage, primarily because they understand why the organization exists, what it's there to do. They know what its values are and they're aligned with those values. So they can operate and make decisions faster without a lot of red tape, but also stay within the bounds of that organization and what its expectations are of its products, of its people, of the way it operates, right? So it gives them a little bit more dexterity in terms of letting their employees make decisions and innovate and evolve. Any comments on that or anything that stood out from the results that surprised anyone or? All right. Okay. So let's get into the purpose archetypes themselves. So these are based on the archetypes that you'll see kind of all over the place from, you know, personality inventories to Disney characters, right? There are archetypes that we intuitively know and recognize. And that's part of what makes archetypes so helpful in storytelling and in business and in a lot of other parts of our lives. And they are mostly based on this concept of the good, the true, the beautiful, which you may have heard of, especially if you ever studied philosophy or anything like that. So what you see here are the values that these archetypes tend to hold. So the beautiful is really about happiness and inspiration and aesthetics, form, anything that relates to those sorts of values would fall in that beautiful category. True is a bit more self-explanatory in terms of learning, curiosity, critical thinking. Good are things like justice, equity, fairness, opportunity, and kindness. So that's where we started with the model. And then we layered over that and said, okay, for when we're looking at this from an organizational standpoint, from a business standpoint, who are the likely audiences that that we are here to serve as organizations, especially as more profit-driven organizations? And it's typically going to be either the individual. And that's what we call that group of companies. It's what we call the mentoring. Or it might be a community, and it could be a community, you know, more typical community like a neighborhood or a particular city, things like that. It could also be a community of businesses or markets or an industry, or, you know, certain kinds of people that live all over the world, but fall into, you know, one kind of category as a community. So that's the second kind of stakeholder group that a company might focus on. And then the third is the environment. And, you know, whether that means having better ways for operating and being more sustainable, being more green, or it could mean things like providing services and products that are just better for the environment, even if it's not an operational choice. So, so that's kind of the framework for the archetypes. And then as we layered those, you'll see, you know, there's kind of these intersections that create these nine boxes. So the nurturer, the teacher, the trainer fall into that mentoring category. Activating companies are the advocator, the canvasser, the builder. And then the tending companies, the ones who are more focused on the environment, are operator, ranger, and composer. And we'll get into these a little bit, but I do want to focus more on the organization design piece. So we'll spend a little bit more time there. So I'm going to just give you each a second to read these, and then I'm just going to kind of ask a question about where you see your organization falling. So just take a second to read through those. Okay, so based on the descriptions, where would you place your organization?
All right.
Activating, more community driven. So I want to hear from people, but my gut says that maybe that's because we tend to be consultants, whether we're internal or external. We tend to advise on organization design. And so maybe we're relating and resonating with that community of businesses or community of people who make up a business. But I'm curious to hear from anybody who wants to chime in about why or how they came to choose that one, or why that one resonates more.
I had a question.
Yeah, sure.
What's the relationship among the three to one another? Because if I look at activating and I looked at mentoring, they're not mutually exclusive. So I'm just trying to get a handle on that.
Yeah. So you said you saw an overlap between mentoring and activating specifically. Is that? I think that's what you said. So I think what differentiates them is what the focus is for the organization. So we can get into a couple examples, but a for instance would be a mentoring company might be a company like Peloton, who, you know, they exist to help individuals improve their lifestyle by, you know, giving them a healthy choice for working out at home. And they have, you know, a lot of different platforms on which people can participate kind of at their own level and at their own pace. And so they're, even though they've created a community by virtue of the way they operate, their driver is the individual who joins. And
so it sounds like it's the point of intervention of where the organization focuses its efforts.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. Yeah.
So Kirsten, I was also having a really hard time discerning or deciding if it was mentoring or activating. Mm-hmm. You know, and I live and work in healthcare, right? So the at its most foundational level, the purpose of an insurance company is the individual, right? And making sure that they can live their best lives. But there's a lot of work that happens that is really about communities, mm-hmm. and changing like socioeconomic, you know, access to care and things like that. So I also felt that they were, overlapping to some degree.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think to borrow the phrase point of intervention, I think that's a good way to differentiate that there are companies who are going to have an impact in all three of these areas and in some capacity. But I think it's how the organization positions itself in terms of how it sees what its core purpose is, right? So in your example with insurance companies, you can have two different insurance companies and one might be mentoring and one might be activating. And it really depends on how the leaders want to position the organization and what they want their focus to be. So if the focus is on the individual as the patients and the policy holders and keeping them healthy and preventative programs and things like that might be more important. Whereas an insurance company who identifies more as an activating company might spend a lot more time and resources on serving specific communities and mm-hmm. making sure that those more specific communities are healthy and engaged in some sort of care and well-being regimen, right? So,
that makes a lot of sense. Yep, thank you.
Yeah, right. So the idea isn't necessarily that any one organization gets forced into one of these categories by virtue of what it does. It's really more about the leaders understanding how they want to position themselves. So, okay. So I'm not going to read through each of these, but just as a for instance, I've got a couple organizations who might fall into some of these. So the nurturer might be an organization like BetterHelp. A teacher organization might be a company like Babbel or Rosetta Stone. A trainer could be Peloton, like I mentioned. It could also be somebody like a Grove Co. because they exist to help people live a healthier life for the planet, right? So a greener existence as an individual. So then we get into the activating companies, which are the Advocator, Canvasser, and Builder. So the Advocator would be a company like Starbucks. A lot of their focus and attention is on the coffee growing community and making sure that they are sourcing their coffee sustainably and equitably and in a fair way. And they really focus on building their relationships with the coffee growers that they source from and helping kind of uplift those communities financially so that Starbucks itself can sustain, but also so that the coffee growers they rely on can sustain. The Canvasser might be a company like Polco. That's a smaller company, so maybe not everybody has heard of them. I believe they're based out of Wisconsin. And what they do is provide access to data for municipalities. So, you know, a city like Chicago might use Polco to poll its community, a representative slice of Chicago to help community leaders make a decision. So that's an example of what a canvasser might be. And then there's a builder who provides healthier spaces or infrastructure for community. So there's an architecture firm also up in Wisconsin who their focus is really on building space that helps the company serve its purpose. So it's really kind of a purpose-driven architecture firm that helps with that physical space of an organization. And then the tending companies. So the operator, the ranger, and the composer. So the operator might be a company like Flock Freight, which is based out in California, and they're a freight company who is kind of, they're rethinking how shipping and freight works across the country in a more sustainable way through their operations. So they're allowing companies who rely on freight to choose this option that is more sustainable. And I think at the same time, kind of setting a new standard in the freight industry, kind of proving to the rest of the industry that it can be done in a more sustainable way. The Ranger delivers data and technology that foster environmental health. So companies like NTT Data are really contributing in that space. And the Composer delivers environmental improvements to our built world. So there's a company called Initech Windows. There's probably a lot more like it that provide who we might consider builders, but they provide those builders with more sustainable materials to kind of help create that more environmentally sustainable built world. So how does that resonate with everyone, just out of curiosity? And then we'll get into the design piece, since that's what we all do here, what most of us do here. Any questions or anything stand out?
Yeah, Kirsten, what's the interplay between this idea of a purpose archetype and what a company would normally identify as its business model? Because when I think about Starbucks, I think about a business model that is about delivering coffee to people. And I don't actually think about the whole grower community interface.
Yeah. So I think the connection there, if I'm understanding your question right, is the business model is the business itself is to provide coffee and tea, right? They also consider themselves to provide a third space, right? We hear them talk about that third space a lot, which also lends itself to community. But in the broader sense of community, part of what they're doing to deliver that coffee and to create customers who are very loyal is to be active in the coffee grower community and to uplift that. And even though your average consumer might not walk into a Starbucks and order a latte and know that it's coming from a sustainable grower, what they do know is that they're getting consistent quality, whether they go to a Starbucks in Lincoln, Nebraska or New York City. They're going to get the same quality and it's going to taste the same. And so that's what the average consumer knows. How Starbucks is creating that experience behind the scenes is a little different, right? It really does have to do with who they're sourcing their coffee from and how well they're taking care of the coffee growing community so that Starbucks itself can continue to offer that. Does that make sense or answer your question?
Yes, it does. Thank you. That's okay. So it's like the purpose drives the decisions and the focus.
That's right. Yeah.
That they make exactly. Within the business model. Okay. Got it.
Right. Thank you. Exactly. So I'm seeing a bunch of comments coming in. I'm not really keeping up with them, but Tanya, if you see any, feel free to chime in and interrupt with some comments that are coming in. I would appreciate
I'll defer to Carlos to be that.
Okay. Or Carlos.
I did actually see one. If I want to ask you to pause, I'm going to go back a little ways. Mm-hmm. Kirsten, it was somebody was commenting and I've lost it. I'm sitting here paging through. Is that they sounded like, it was Jim Dowling. I'll let you speak to it if you don't mind, Jim. I don't want to throw anybody into the spotlight unwillingly, but you talked about these being too high level. And I'm wondering if we don't get to the grounded part of this in a bit, Kirsten, but Jim, can you just say more about that comment? Or would you be willing to? If you unmute, it's easier to hear you. Still muted. Tanya, can we remotely unmute? There he is. You had it for a second, Jim. There you go.
Hi. Yeah, I wouldn't let me unmute myself, which many people are grateful for. It's just some of the things popped. For example, let me use Starbucks as an example. Starbucks is a client, or has been a client on a number of occasions, and they do indeed use these kinds of messaging in their advertising and marketing, and even in their prospectus that they use for soliciting investors. But operationally, they would list these kinds of things in values and value propositions. So they would say that, for example, they would consider coffee growers as partners of theirs. And they would list the values that they value proposition to the growers. But what they really focus on, and what's sort of an interesting thing for me is their purpose, and I just looked it up on my list, is to inspire and nurture the human spirit. So Starbucks is willing to do just about anything that would fulfill that purpose, even if it has nothing to do with coffee. And what they make that clear at the senior leadership level, so that when they ask them to get out in the community and discover where can we help these communities, those executives feel that it's part of their job. That's the organization they joined. Mm-hmm. So they would definitely use these kinds of messages in what I would call brochures and marketing. But operationally and in org design, we take it down a few levels. And just as a quick example, if we're designing an organization to radically change the way they do things, they ask the question, would this violate our purpose of inspiring and nurturing the human spirit? And if anybody can identify any element of the organization design or the transformation, the change management, that would do that, it becomes an issue that needs to be addressed immediately.
Yeah, thank you, Jim, for chiming in. That was really good perspective that I think hones in on a lot of what we're talking about. And I think, you know, earlier I mentioned that purpose-driven organizations tend to be able to evolve and innovate faster. And you touched on part of why that is. And that's because, just like you said, you know, Starbucks would stop at nothing to nurture the human spirit. And so that what that does is it opens up doors for them as a company to think about their products and how they're operating, and not just their products, but also how they're behaving as an organization within the communities that they have stores, which is really all exactly. Over the world. I think so. And then part of why I like Starbucks as an example is because for all the good it's doing, there are also people who would raise their hand and say, well, wait a second, you know, if they're about nurturing the human spirit, what about the mom and pop shops who have been in these small towns, you know, for, you know, a couple generations, or even if they're brand new, they're local. And, you know, so how does Starbucks interplay with those local coffee shops to uplift them as well, so that they're not putting them out of business by virtue of being in the community. There's also organization design choices there. You know, how do we position ourselves in the communities that we choose to have stores, and how do we compete? I think that's a huge organization design choice that impacts a company like Starbucks, who really does do a lot of good, but also can be seen as harmful in certain communities. So it's a really interesting example that we could probably talk about, you know, in one session on its own, right? So let's get into the design framework a little bit. So for anybody on the call who's here more for the purpose side and not the design side, if your background isn't in organization design, the Galbraith STAR model is one that we look to pretty regularly. It's pretty tried and true. And it's, you know, this concept that these five points of the STAR are really the important design choices to be made when you're working on aligning an organization as a system. So that's one of the tried and true. There are others, seven S's, but there's a couple more that are kind of the tried and true. But as I was looking at these, I was thinking about them in terms of some of the design choices that might fall outside of this model, and trying to find something that would help make it clearer where things like reporting and externalities and stakeholders and governance and the business model itself, where do those fall? And I think an argument could be made for where these might fall in the STAR model. But I also came across Hubert Joly, who wrote a book called The Heart of Business. He was the turnaround CEO for Best Buy. And in his book, The Heart of Business, he lays out this kind of framework. And he doesn't position it specifically as an organization design framework. But I started seeing where some of this stuff fit. And I really liked the thinking around it. And it was that businesses have choices to make in terms of people, business, and finance. And if they do it in that order, right, if the people are the first priority, the business is the second, the finance will fall into place, but it still needs to be, you know, managed responsibly. So it's an important piece of the puzzle. And so this is kind of where I started plugging in those elements of org design that we all know, in addition to things like externalities, which I don't think are more traditional org design frameworks account for, stakeholders specifically. So not just the customers and not just the employees, but also the suppliers and vendors and, you know, all of the other partners that we work with and the communities that we impact by virtue of existing, right? So this is what I started to play with, and this is what I would really like to hear your thoughts on. And I also, as I was building this and thinking through it, it occurred to me that not every design choice carries as much weight across businesses, right? So if you have two different businesses, one might roles and rewards and benefits, for instance, looking at the nurturer, might carry more weight in the people category than some of the others, right? Where, you know, for another organization, roles are still important, but that collaboration piece carries a little more weight. So the model isn't necessarily, as you're seeing it here, isn't necessarily to say that, for instance, the teacher organization only needs to focus on roles and collaboration, but that those two pieces might carry a bit more weight and might rise to the surface as design choice priorities. And so that's kind of what I have been working with and what I would, you know, really love to hear some dialogue around and just kind of get an understanding from this audience about how this resonates, what it's missing, what it might add to your understanding. So if we're willing, I would love to just open it up to conversation. And if you'd like me to scroll through a couple of the other pages here so you can see other examples, I'd be happy to do that. But I would love to just open it up to conversation at this point.
Were people and trainer intersect, where we're talking about the whole idea of a broader range of stakeholders? both internal and external to whatever the organization is. I think the key concept there is building and sustaining coalitions. So that intersect. How do you build and sustain coalitions that allow this broader initiative to move forward? Because when you're talking about something that's global or talking about the environment as a whole, the demands of that are significantly, I believe, different than working in the other two areas. Just a thought.
Yeah, I think that concept of coalitions is really important, not just for purpose-driven organizations, but I think for business going forward. I think the pandemic taught us a lot about just how global we are, and how connected our communities are, even if they're separated by oceans and borders and cultures. There is definitely something that connects us all. And so the idea that one company would be able to, you know, make the impact. And I think that's what stops a lot of companies from going this route, is that they kind of have this perception that, well, we can't make a dent in the problem, so let's just continue to exist as we do and make a profit, pay our people, and call it a day. But Mike, to your point about coalitions, that's when we start to get this momentum and start to reach that tipping point, where the more organizations that collectively behave this way and compete in healthy ways, that's when we really start to make a dent in a lot of our problems, whether it's environmental or social or whatever it might be.
There's a heated conversation happening in the chat. It's some of the most recent ones, prompted, I think, by Bruce's comment around stuck on a fundamental. Performance is often a cover word for profit. Mm. That's the core of how we're doing. And it flows down from there. I just wanted to raise that to the level of the conversation, because if it is fundamental, then it might stop us from getting farther down the path of exploration here. Bruce, can you talk a little bit about that?
I have a bad attitude that I notice is growing in me over the last decade or so. And I right now, connecting with an organization, I might get hired by them. That's a real exception to this that might undercut my bad attitude. It's a library. The exception is that I'm finding the people that I've run into and watch the board in action, watch the staff in action, they aren't even pursuing the performance in library terms, at least not library as I understand it. They are looking at more the kinds of things that Kirsten's putting out here about how do we affect the community, how do we affect the underserved. They really seem to be there. So I'm excited there. They are an exception, though, and I've been finding more and more that I react badly. Even Kirsten, when I heard you say the companies that do better with purpose also do better with performance, I said to myself, do you mean profit? Is that what we want? and that's my own. It's a problem I have. That I'm looking for interventions, well, probably psychology for me, but as I work with clients, as I work with this library and some other organizations that are not there, I try to look at what can I do that fits what they're asking me to do and mm-hmm. gets into these fundamentals.
Yeah. And
sometimes when I do it, what they do is they just run. You know, they I think they run for a good reason, that they might get exposed. But anyway, that's where I get stuck, is at that fundamental level. And then my blood pressure goes up and I become less effective.
Right.
Less effective.
So my response to that, without having all the context of the conversation, I've kind of been trying to catch up with it, but without having the full context of what other folks are saying, I think the way I would respond to that is that when I'm talking about purpose-driven organizations, I'm talking specifically about for-profit organizations. And they inherently need to perform in a profitable way, right? But I think where people get tripped up, and by people, in this case, I mean leaders, get tripped up is they view purpose, or they view profit as the reason they exist, when in reality, profit is just table stakes. They have to have profit to exist at all. And profit is also an outcome of the way they exist and the way they choose to operate. So it's an indicator of their performance. There are lots of other indicators of their performance, but that is certainly an important one in the for-profit world. And so I think it's about shifting the thinking as a leader from how do we get profitable and how do we serve that purpose of being profitable, and expanding that thinking to how do we exist in a way that is profitable and that will sustain us for the long term, not just for the next quarter or two. That short-sighted thinking is what's getting a lot of companies and leaders in trouble. So I think that maybe that's where the balance is, and that's where recognizing that that profit is okay, that profit is good, that companies need profit to survive and thrive and to have the impact that they want to have. And so they leaders do have to think about that. But it's balancing that with the other choices that organizations need to make day to day and year to year.
There's an old Peter Drucker quote. I can't remember it exactly, but it's something about we need to make a profit to serve our purpose. And that to me is always made perfect sense. And yet the level I get stuck at is that it seems a paradigm level within not just US, but US for one, the paradigm being that we must make that profit, but we don't have to have this balanced scorecard of other, some of those other dimensions, Kirsten, that you're talking about. We have to make the profit or I will lose my job, I'll lose my credibility, I'll lose my authority, blah, blah, blah. And it's at that level where I get stuck. And I'm just curious if others face that, if you've tried interventions that have gotten, you know, helped put that in the kind of perspective that Kirsten is laying out here.
Yeah, so to that, I would say, you know, I think part of what leaders are starting to see, and in particular, I saw somebody comment on investors and shareholder communities. And I think they're also starting to recognize that this purpose-driven approach does have a much more valuable long-term payout, right? So even if they're motivated by the money piece, they're still understanding that how they get to that successful money piece matters. And that has more and more to do with environmental, social, governance, right? That those ESG factors. I think there's a lot more trend towards understanding that and recognizing the importance of it. So you'll see, you know, like BlackRock will, you know, is putting out their annual reports and really being upfront about the fact that investing in these kinds of organizations is the way to go. And that's where investors are going to get the most long-term payout for their investment. So I think there is a trend towards that. But I'm curious to hear, you know, what others think and what others are seeing, or maybe even chiming in on what's happening in the chat a little bit too.
Well, the chat is as lively as I've ever seen it in one of these community conversations. And Tanya makes a very good suggestion that perhaps we pick up a conversation about the role of purpose in organizational, is it governance, choice making, that tension that exists between having a purpose and needing to have metrics that suggest you're making you're financially successful, profit, growth, market share, whatever. There is that tension, and somebody made a comment about it's something we all face as consultants, and clients mm-hmm. will choose us based on our values around this sort of stuff. So I think it is a fascinating area to continue to explore outside the realm of just strictly org design, but working with our clients and their value systems and our values systems. Mm-hmm. That's what I hear playing out. I think that's what I'm taking from this. I'm sure there's more
to
it than that, but that tension is very present in this exchange.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I, in terms of design, I think we could do another session. How do I then apply this model, Kirsten, to
right.
the choices I have to make with my client around how we enact their business, their operating model, right? How
do
we bring their operating model in a purposeful way, which is
So the flow that we've found is starting with having clients take what we call the purpose quick start. And that really starts to get to some of their motivators and drivers, and as an organization, both from the purpose standpoint of, you know, what their broader, more inspirational purpose is, and also the more practical drivers and motivators, and then aligning those things or seeing where there's misalignment among leaders, or, you know, between leaders and employees, and starting to make design choices that are really intentionally aligned with the decisions that they've made about how they want to position themselves, what they believe their purpose truly is. And that's where these org design elements that you see on this screen, start to show up, and I'll go back up to this one so you can see them all. But and I think, you know, part of what I've been struggling with as an org designer is it okay to have certain design choices that rise to the top as perhaps carrying more weight than some of the other design choices, because so much of what we know is really about bringing those design elements into balance. And so that's another thing that I've been curious about. And as I work with more and more companies on this, I'm learning more and starting to believe that it is okay to have some that carry more weight than others, as long as you're not ignoring the others. So that's kind of where I'm at with it. I'm, you know, obviously curious, you know, as to others' thoughts, but just for a couple of you who are asking, I'll share this with Tanya so that you all can see it and spend a little more time with it. But these are, I've got kind of a layout for each of the categories of companies. So, and then for each archetype, kind of they're usually about 5 to 6 org design choices that carry more weight.
And there was some interest, I know, in seeing not just which ones carry more weight, but what are the choices that these suggest.
Yeah.
In terms of actually making design choices, right? We're 4 minutes left. I think maybe we do a good community conversation move here, and we say, let's keep the line open. Those of you can hang around past the top of the hour And want to get into some of the more practical applications, Kirsten, if that's okay, saying here's, if this is the model, this is what it might suggest for making choices about org design. Mm-hmm. Are you up for that? Because I don't know what your calendar looks like. Here I am.
I've got a little extra time.
More time.
Yeah, I could probably do another 15, 20 minutes and still be okay on time.
Okay, and I think, let's see where that lands, and then maybe we think about if somebody in this group wants to host one of our coffee and cocktail chats to go deeper into purpose conceptually, we can do that as well.
Yeah.
All right. So, Wood, knowing that, I'll turn it back over to you, Kirsten. I just wanted to create that possibility for us if it was indeed a possibility.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So, I'll stay on. If you do need to jump off though, thank you so much for being here and for your contributions in the very active chat. I appreciate it, and I'm excited to read through those comments a little bit more and just kind of see what the thoughts were and questions and the pieces of this that people are grappling with, because it's probably some of the same stuff I'm grappling with too as I continue to evolve with this. So thank you very much for being here, and I'll give those folks who need to jump off a second to jump off, and then we can pick the conversation up with anybody who would like to stay on.
Thank you, Kirsten, and thank you everybody who was here. We've already lost a few people, so I missed sharing gratitude with them, but those of you who are, will we continue the recording, Jane asks. I'm assuming we will.
Yes, we can, and we've still got a pretty captive audience. There's still 22 of you.
Yeah.
22, why do I show 15?
Yeah. Excuse me, Kirsten, this is Kathy. I will need to jump off. Interesting though, the thing that keeps going through my mind I love your framework, that I think might be an interesting question when it comes to getting grittier about design choices. I keep wanting to go back to the next level up, which is the tending, the mentoring, and the activating levels. Mm-hmm. And because I think there's a huge scope issue that needs to be addressed around from a design standpoint, and it would be really useful to first look at design choices at that level versus at your next level.
And then that level down.
And then next level down, because what I'm concerned about is if you bring it down to the next level, you might be really limiting what it is you want to be able to do. I think that there might be some very interesting design choices and variations among those. Mm-hmm. When you look at the mentoring, tending, activating, I know I'm not saying them in order, but because the scope is so different and the stakeholder levels are so different, that there can be a very, very fruitful conversation around design choices at that level. And that's what I've been grappling with, you know, through this conversation. And I apologize, I can't stay on much longer, but I think I'll stay on a little longer, but I think to me, that's where the interest for me is on this.
Yeah, I've actually grappled with that same exact question, Kathy, as I've been working with this. So from the Purpose Quick Start, we generate a report, and usually that report includes some recommendations around more specific design choices, right? So we'll use, you know, if the Quick Start comes back and they're a teacher organization, for instance, I'll use some of the other information from the Quick Start responses for context and make some recommendations about design choices, but make sure I'm being really clear and explicit that this is a dialogue tool. It's not a hard and fast, these are my recommendations and you should do this. And, you know, if you're not going that route, then I'm not going to help you. Right. It's truly more a dialogue starter, and a dialogue tool for companies for leadership teams in particular, to have these conversations about what does that look like, and what else rises to the surface as we think about our purpose in terms of these design choices. And I think, Kathy, that you're right to an extent that it might have more to do with that higher level than these specific archetypes. So I'm definitely curious to keep experimenting with that and seeing over time, especially if we start to see trends, in terms of, all of the activating companies seem to agree that, these particular things are what rise to the surface for them. So it's a good point of curiosity for sure.
Thank you, Kirsten. Great conversation. Thanks to all.
Yeah, thanks for being here. So I think there were some questions about, so we've got these design elements, but what are the more specific design choices behind them? Does that kind of capture the question that people are having?
I think it's out there. It's about the implications of these, right? So these are the areas. It's the so what, if you will.
From
a client, what could this mean? And maybe even drawing on examples of your own work.
Yeah. So one that I like to go back to, because it was just a good experience, I think for me and for the client, was a seafood company. They're kind of like a fast casual seafood company. And they did the Purpose Quick Start. They did the first iteration of it. They were one of the companies that helped me kind of do one of those first tests of it and iterate on it based on their experience and their responses. But one of the things that came out of that was really fun was, the leaders, the two co-founders, when they took the Purpose Quick Start separate from each other, they both had the same response that their purpose should be something around, seafood sustainability. But a lot of the other outcomes of their Purpose Quick Start were not aligning with that. And so we used that to have a dialogue with them about, what's showing up and what is this misalignment really about? And what they came to realize was that they thought that their purpose should be something around seafood sustainability. But truly, that wasn't really what the founders wanted the business to do. That was certainly a piece of it, and they wanted to consider sustainability in their sourcing. But really what was more important for them was providing jobs to more underserved communities and training them in areas like customer service and management and accounting and, some of the things that are, relevant to all businesses, not just restaurants. And so that, just knowing that and having that conversation and coming to that realization helped them discover how they could position roles differently or how they could design roles differently within their seafood company, within their restaurant organization. And also the leadership piece, how do they lead and how important is it for store managers to have time to mentor people as opposed to, focusing exclusively on numbers and accounting, which is, in restaurant industry, typically what a store manager would be focused on. And so how can they uplift some of the other employees to focus on those things and create more time for those in a leadership position or management position to mentor? So those were some specific design choices that came out of just understanding and coming to a realization of what their purpose really was and what they really did believe that their business could do for the communities that they were in. Yep, Bruce.
That strikes me, Kirsten, as an example of shifting more into purpose, by that discovery that, maybe what we really want to do is you know, the training and the development of people in our communities. It strikes me as moving maybe a little more toward community orientation. Mm-hmm. It also fits to me well with that word that Mike McGovern brought up early on, the coalition idea, that by their doing that, they may have begun to connect or empower some coalitions of those people that they now want to train and move forward. But, you know, if they start to get those people feeling like, oh yeah, this maybe is more about us and less about fish, those people might start to not only feel more empowered, but want that business to succeed, even in profitable terms, but also that they feel like it serves our purposes better. And I think of that word coalition as one of those critical elements that when I rarely get some success in, you know, a focus on real purpose, it's usually about coalitions. It's usually about a discovery that there are lots of people we haven't been paying attention to that have a lot of clout together. And once they start connecting to each other, that clout starts to tell us what our purpose really ought to be. And I just find that as a very useful, leads to a lot of different kinds of design tools that can use that and strengthen it toward a larger purposeful kind of move.
Yeah, absolutely.
To Bruce's comment there, probably about, I don't know, maybe 6 years ago, we started to run into organizations that felt that they were being held accountable for things that they had nothing to do with. They were not ESG friendly. They were not on whatever the new shiny object was, promoters or funders or whatever. And as a sort of a device, we split purpose from values in this way. We said it's okay for your organization to have a purpose of providing an estate for our families and their children. That's a perfectly good reason for starting up an organization. Now, as you do that, what do you hold most dear? And that moved eased the conversation. And every time they put down a value, for example, I'll conjure one from the seafood restaurant picture, is when someone would put down, we value contributing to sustainability of the fisheries of the world. We asked why. How does that help you fulfill the purpose? Mm-hmm. And people would sort of break ranks in decorum and say, what are you talking about? If we don't have any fish, we don't have any restaurants. If we don't have restaurants, we don't have a legacy. And you say, yes, that is the point, is that if you can tie your values back to how you want to behave as you fulfill your purpose, then you've got a set of a connection between values and purpose that you can use in many ways.
Yeah.
So the HR team jumps on board and says, well, why don't we ask employees or potential employees how they feel about these values? How would they describe living these values in their job that they're applying for in our company? And when a section of Microsoft adopted that, they received, as they said, more blank stares than you could absolutely imagine. They just wanted to work for Microsoft. They really didn't care what they did when they were in Microsoft. Similarly with Google. However, when the employees found out that they were making drones to support warfare, they said, what's that got to do with democratizing information? And they walked out of the offices in Cambridge, Mass. So this, you know, you talk about the archetypes and the way to work them with the org design models. I think I mentioned earlier in a comment that these models came from an age where the purpose of all of these consulting firms and academics was the purpose of business is business.
Yeah.
The newer models, the holistic models, aren't all that popular. They're not all that widespread, I should say. But a lot of them are very effective at connecting the dots. So if you're going to put in, if you're going to organize a department to develop and market a new product, you need to be able to explain how marketing that new product fulfills purpose, and it ought to be designed in a way that lives the values.
Mm-hmm.
And if you find out that there are two different value systems that are required, so as an example, Hewlett-Packard has org designs where the value system is designed around entrepreneurship and collaboration, but they've also got medical devices companies where it's all about control. So
yeah.
This idea of microcultures evolving from the purpose-driven organization where values is integrated with purpose very tightly says that there are design choices that come directly from the purpose and the values if you separate the two.
Mm-hmm.
And the magic was that if you challenge in org design the leadership team to create a purpose statement that will last 10 years. Now create values that will last at least 5 years. And give us a vision that will last between 2 and 50 years. And make sure they're all consistent with each other. There, your design choices pop right off the page.
Yeah. Well, that's really interesting, Jim. I like that distinction. Between purpose and values, because I think that's a question we get a lot, is, you know, well, what's the difference? And is my purpose the same thing as my mission? No. It's also not the same thing as your values. And so I really appreciate that distinction. So thank you.
And if you force them to say your vision has to extend out 25 years or more, and your mission can't be any more than 24 months.
Right.
It gets really clear very fast.
Yeah. 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 That's a great approach. I like that. Thank you. Any other, I've got a couple more minutes. Any other burning questions or thoughts or ways you would like to pick this back up? Maybe a coffee and cocktails conversation, as Carlos said.
Could be.
Didn't have anybody raise their hand in the when I offered that opportunity, but we'll see.
All right.
Well, Kirsten, it sounds like we've reached the practical closing point.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for bringing this back to us and for taking us deeper and in some new and interesting directions. Thank you for the extra time from those who's from you and for those who stuck around. Wonderful stuff. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks so much for being here, everybody, and for sticking around a little longer. Really appreciate the conversation. So thank you.
I want to know a year from now how this is growing and evolving, Kirsten. We'll check
absolutely
in.
Yeah, yeah? Okay. I'll keep you all posted.
Tanya, anything you need to say to wrap us up today?
No, I think we are all good. I'll pause the recording here. And what do we have? We've got an announcement going out for another new experiment for Design Dilemma that we're going to be holding the last week of this month. And we'll just continue to keep offering these opportunities for practitioner conversation.
All right. Thank you so much, everyone. Have a good rest of your week.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye all.